Brian McMasters is running out of time. His lungs failing.
You can just see how the scarring goes much further out into the lungs.
His body declining.
Since we've met him, he has developed heart dysfunction.
His only hope, a donor.
Somebody has to die so you can live.
Someday doctors may create organs on demand.
A lot of people are working to get it done.
But for now, Brian's family must watch.
There's 52 people waiting for lungs. I want him to be number one.
And wait.
Sitting, praying.
Hoping for their own miracle.
Life and death comes together in a very peculiar way.
Transplant, next on Chronicle.
Deep breath with an open mouth.
Brian McMasters is struggling to breathe.
It takes a lot out of me.
Fighting for life.
It was getting tougher and tougher. Showering's very difficult. It takes me at least 20 minutes. I spend more time catching my breath than I do actually washing my body.
He wasn't always this frail. For more than 3 decades, he patrolled the streets as a Boston police officer, diagnosed with pulmonary sarcoidosis in the 90s. Decades later, his lungs are fatally scarred.
Pulmonary sarcoidosis is an autoimmune disease, which causes scar tissue to form in the lungs. I'm stage 4 as far as scarring is concerned. It doesn't get worse than that.
His lungs are sort of shrunken down compared to what you would normally expect.
Dr. Hari Melidi, co-director of lung transplant at Brigham and Women's Hospital, shows us the significant decline in Brian's lungs over the last decade.
You can just see how the scarring goes much further out into the lungs than it used to, and eventually will make it so that they don't exchange oxygen or carbon dioxide the way that he needs.
Brian's only hope, a lung transplant.
I did a lot of soul searching. I did a lot of research. One of the things that scared me about a lung transplant is it's the average person lives between 2 to 5 years, 2 to 7 years. And I didn't like those odds.
When is his life and quality of life so affected that a transplant is likely to benefit him? With his disease, there's pretty good evidence that if he gets transplanted, then his overall length of life is prolonged. His prognosis is improved. But the decision that he has to make is if he can stretch that period out as long as possible before he actually gets on the list, that's better for him. The danger with that is he has a sudden deterioration and then is all of a sudden just too sick for transplant.
A few months ago, Brian joined the 115,000 people who are registered for a transplant in the United States, a new name added every 10 minutes.
We can't just snap our fingers and suddenly somebody's got a new set of lungs.
As names outpace donations, an organ shortage means patients will wait.
If they're very stable, on very minimal oxygen, at home, functionally able to do a lot of the things that they want to do, then they're going to wait a long time. Years.
To ensure priority, the U.S. is broken up into 11 regions. Each candidate is added to a computer system called the UNOS list. When a donor organ is identified, it automatically ranks those patients most in need.
That score is primarily determined by the nature of the disease that's affecting their lungs and how sick they are.
The irony, you have to be among the sickest to receive a transplant, but well enough to survive it.
It's all about preserving everything as is.
Right.
Brian is well aware of his role in what is a race against time.
Your albuterol nebulizer every 6 hours.
But even with a strict dedication to medications and lifestyle, on this New Year's Eve, the stakes are even higher. He is dangerously close to the 15% of people that never make it to transplant.
Since we've met him, he has developed heart dysfunction associated with his lung disease, which is often a sign of decompensation from someone's lung disease. It's hard for people to be able to manage and compensate once the heart becomes affected. In recent weeks, we've noticed that there's been a deterioration in his heart function. So that increases the urgency.
Despite the odds, Brian remains optimistic about the future.
The thing is our 3 boys were born at Brigham and Women's. So what better place to get a new life?
Look at the picture I found. You and me and the 3 boys and Cheryl at the cottage, even Grandpa's in the picture. It's before oxygen. Maybe next year we'll be back with no oxygen.
Hopefully.
Maybe next year. But weeks after we first met Brian, he remains largely tethered to oxygen tanks he cannot live without.
I increased my oxygen up to 10 liters. I'm normally on 8 liters. That gives me a little bit extra to exercise with.
And struggles to maintain a level of health he will need for the physical stress of surgery.
I just go until I get out of breath and I stop. Wait for my oxygen to recover.
But movement isn't the only element in this battle.
Do you have something to eat for lunch?
I haven't eaten lunch yet, no. I haven't been this skinny since I got out of the police academy.
Got to put a little weight on you.
Transplant is an intimate struggle for everyone who cares about the patient.
She's my rock.
He'd do the same for me.
I couldn't do it without her.
He'd do the same for me. And then you hit
Brian's wife, Jane, remains glued to the UNO site.
I look at it every day just because I'm waiting for the day that we get this transplant. There's 52 people waiting for lungs. I want him to be number one because I want the phone call. But then I realize there's people sicker than him. And I realize there's people that's less sicker that are going to have to wait longer. So it's a system to make it fair that just because you're rich or you're important, you're not going to, he's going to get his lung because he's on the list, and that's when he's supposed to get his lung.
Patient care and research.
Dr. Stefan Tullius, Chief of Transplant Surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital.
Transplantation is unique because it's not the one single moment where something happens and then one loses contact with the patient. It is really the long-term relationship. For us, it is equally a burden to see that patients would not reach the time point when they are going to get a transplant.
On average, more than 20 people will die every day, waiting. While just one donor can save as many as 8 lives and help many more in need of healing tissue, the number of available donors falls far short of the need. And when it comes to lungs, 80% of organs that are donated are not viable. But there is one area of increase, a byproduct of the opioid crisis, Brian has signed up to receive from a once unlikely donor pool.
We're in the process of completing a trial looking at taking lungs from donors that have hepatitis C and using them for transplant and managing that in the recipient. In the past, we would just exclude all of those donors automatically, but now they make up such a large percentage of the possible donor pool that if we excluded them, then there's a lot of people that are waiting for organs that wouldn't get transplanted.
While doctors work to increase the value of organs and long-term outlook,
we would want to treat our patients in a way that we have the one organ for life, for a lifetime, and we are not there yet.
They hold in high regard every organ they do receive.
Now, all of a sudden, you see this donor and the relevance of it, and you value this gift now as the surgeon also in a different way.
And screen patients carefully. The organ's survival, just as important as the patient's.
We would not move forward if we would not think that a patient is going to be compliant.
So breathe out. And
for Brian, the reality of uncertainty, every breath is another minute closer to transplant, but also a realization that time may run out.
I'm happy I've gone as far as I have. I look at the people I know that aren't here. And I think that I've lived a good life. I have friends that never saw 60. So that always weighs in the back of my mind that I had that much more time than they did.
In a city that has seen milestone transplants, an accomplishment shared with pride.
Those were the Herrick twins.
Dr. Tullia shows us a list of names, each one key to making transplant surgery possible and survivable, starting in 1954. With the first ever successful transplant of any organ. Richard Herrick was in the Navy and became severely ill with acute renal failure. His twin brother, Ronald, donated his kidney. Before this surgery, the immune system made long-term survival from transplant nearly impossible. Recipients didn't survive more than 30 days.
There was no real understanding of the immune response. And therefore, Dr. Murray went ahead and started out with identical twin transplants.
But it is a surgery that may have never happened if it wasn't for one twin's determination.
There were letters exchanged between the identical twins prior to the transplant where the recipient told his brother to leave the hospital instantly because it was all crazy and they shouldn't do it and it was too dangerous. But they went through it and a real milestone.
Transplant success, but saving lives means thinking in the future.
It's great to look into the history, but you want to use the knowledge from the history in the best way for what you do right now.
At Massachusetts General Hospital, today's patients are fueling tomorrow's advances.
Where this gets emotional is when you sit across from a patient where you can't deliver today. And that's in some ways what motivates us and what drives us, you know, to say we need to come up with a solution.
Dr. Harold Ott, a thoracic surgeon at MGH, discovered a method now used in what is called whole organ regeneration.
The hope is that someday you will walk into a clinic with heart failure or end-stage lung disease, and physician scientists will be able to create an organ on demand for you. You use the blueprint of an organ that outlines the shape of an organ, let's say in the case of the lung, the lobes of the lung, the airways, the blood vessels, and then repopulate that scaffold with new cells.
These tiny rat lungs may be the seed to off-the-shelf organs, a solution to the shortage.
These are lungs that are being perfused with soap solution, really a cleaning solution that removes all the cells.
What's left? A shell of possibility.
That's really what we do here. We try to mimic donor organs in some ways. That heart or lung, in an ideal world, will be made from the patient's own cells and therefore will not be rejected by the patient's immune system.
But how do the cells know where to go or even what to do? Ott credits a combination of scientific discoveries blending together.
Over the past couple decades, these fields have advanced to us being able to take a patient's skin cells or a patient's blood cells and reprogram these cells into stem cells, so cells that are capable of becoming literally any type of tissue in the human body.
Artificial lungs have received breaths in this lab, been transplanted into animals. The human building blocks are there, but what we know is science takes time.
End organ failure affects hundreds of millions of patients worldwide, and biologic organ replacement is a logical solution. Are we going to be ready in 5, 10, or 15 years? Nobody can answer that right now, but a lot of people are working to get it done.
For Brian, a donor is his only option, and time is running out.
Twice on Sunday, I started coughing. I had a hard time breathing.
And so is his ability to maintain his health.
My condition is worsening, but they're not sure if it's the new medication that they put me on or it's just a case of the disease getting worse. This is the hardest part of transplant, is the weight.
The physical toll evident in every breath. Brian is quite literally clinging to life. Despite his ongoing optimism, the emotional toll has set in.
You just get to a point where you want it to be over. Unfortunately, there aren't enough donors out there. Days like today, I just sit and pray and realize that I'm in the home stretch.
This is a tier of intersection where life meets death. The place we're waiting gives way to a cascade of conflicting emotions.
Shock. Silence. Elation.
Brian is about to get a chance to breathe again. But only because someone, a donor not known to us, will take their last breath.
To be my hero.
It's just overwhelming. It's not even an emotion you can describe that somebody has to die so you can live. And not only Brian will live, other people will live. You know, hopefully whoever's donating these lungs will be able to donate their heart and their liver
their kidneys and everything else. So there could be 10 people tonight that are getting the best news in the world.
Brian's lungs are coming from New York, out of his donor region, but within the 250 nautical miles allowed for consideration. On this Friday night, 5 months after he was added to the transplant list, Brian is the sickest viable match on the East Coast.
God bless you.
As he sits in the faith he credits for keeping him alive.
Please be with me.
In another hospital, a family says their last goodbye.
Life and death comes together in a very peculiar way. Someone is dying and someone else gets the organ and continues to live with those organs.
What follows often a profound moment of silence for a final gift. But there is little time.
It's something that is under time pressure and needs to be organized well.
The donor's lungs can only live outside the body for about 4 hours.
Our team has left to go evaluate the lungs.
Brian's surgeon, Dr. Capolino, prepares both the patient and himself for a long night ahead.
Frequently, organ transplantation works with two teams. There's a donor team and then there is a recipient team, and they communicate, and the recipient team may already start without the organ being in the hospital.
The OR at Brigham and Women's is getting ready to save Brian's life.
I'll see you downstairs.
Thank you very
we'll
much.
Talk to you afterwards. Okay. Okay?
Like 20 years younger.
I feel 20 years younger.
You look great.
I feel great.
Brian's new lungs and the renewed life they have given him is evident. And so is his gratitude for a family he may never know.
Probably not a day will go by that I won't think of them for the rest of my life. I just finished my afternoon prayers.
Though Brian's health struggles are not over.
And there was a doctor standing beside me telling me he had a set of lungs for me. That was my miracle.
Neither is his journey.